Hello, and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. My name is the long-lost Harry Lloyd, alongside me the wandering Skylar Vicroy. We've finally found our way back from the mid-season summer break wilds. I think it's been, Skylar, you were saying, about 2 months since we've done a show. So a wee bit of time. We have missed everybody, but don't worry, we are back to catch up on all the things that happened in Brno / Brno and Austria, and also to catch up on all the news. There's been a fair bit of news going on, but hopefully we'll be able to cover it. Skylar, how are you, though? That's the most important thing. All good?
Yeah, it's good. I've been busy over here running with my construction projects that I'm doing in my, what I would like to call my downtime in between jobs, even though it seems like I'm busier these days doing that than I was when I was actually employed for real. But yeah, I know we're back. We're probably a little rusty. I mean, as you may have noticed, Harry kind of forgot this is episode number 533 for Wednesday, the 16th of August, 2017. We'll just do a little tag team work there on the intro. But it's good to be back. It's good to talk about racing. I actually did manage to make it to a race recently. I got to check out the Sunday race in the Moto America round, so that's good. Although I wasn't in Motopod mode, I wasn't going around and grabbing interviews because I got to go there on a short notice, and so I got to make it there for some of the racing. But yeah, like Harry said, we're back. There's lots of things to talk about, news, and two MotoGP rounds. So without further ado, I guess we should just get on down the road.
Yeah, so before we went into the summer break, probably the biggest news was the rumor that Jack Miller was going to go to Pramac. Everybody was pretty convinced that it was going to be announced in Brno, however you want to say it. But after Jack Miller helped Honda ride to fourth in the Suzuka 8-hour, his teammate Takaaki Nakagami had a crash, which sort of upset their podium challenge. But, Miller put in a pretty solid effort at the Suzuka 8-hour, and whether it was directly because of that or whether, this contract was floating around before, did seem like Honda put in a pretty decent money offer, actually, to keep Jack Miller, have him stay at the Australia Galicia squad on a 2017 factory Honda. So that sort of seemed to delay Jack's decision by about a week. But then at the Red Bull Ring, or maybe actually just after the Red Bull Ring, Miller did announce that he would be moving to Pramac Ducati. So it does look like everybody was right about those rumors. Miller, saying on a quote in his website that he's pretty excited by it all. At this stage in his career, does have to try something a bit different. He hasn't had the most incredible results on the Honda. Certainly stepping up directly from Moto3. I think a lot of people were expecting the world, but Miller hasn't really, aside obviously there's the win in Assen, but beyond that, the odd stunning ride here or there, Miller sort of struggled to break the top five and has, pretty consistently been floating, at the bottom of the top 10 or maybe just outside. We'll have to see what he can do. He's obviously replacing Scott Redding. Jack Miller is now also going out with Scott Redding's former girlfriend, and Scott Redding is going out with Maverick Vinales' former girlfriend.
Jeez.
If anybody has Instagram and follows the riders there, they will know all about that drama. But needless to say, that was the talk of the paddock in Austria, is the rotation of both bikes and girlfriends. But luckily, we just care about the racing. So as I said, Miller's now in Pramac. Scott Redding's out, but Scott Redding is now actually in at Aprilia, and Lowe's is out. Lowe's getting kicked out of Aprilia. Again, that's a rumor that's been going on for a while. Aprilia haven't really seemed super happy with Lowe's. To be fair to Lowe's, his results haven't been that good, and he has crashed a fair bit, but up until Austria, he was on a different spec bike to his teammate, he was a rookie, so, understandable that he was pretty upset to be kicked out of his two-year contract midway through. But, Scott Redding will be replacing Lowe's on the Aprilia. I'm not sure if that's a huge upgrade, in terms of rider, to be honest. Lowe's in an interview after the news broke said, well, it's not like they're putting Valentino Rossi on the bike. So, yeah, interesting to see how Redding does go. There were some rumors that Redding would be going to World Superbikes, but Redding said he'd rather spend a year at home on the couch than racing World Superbikes, which I thought was a pretty odd statement, regardless of if I commentate on the series or not, but such is life. It's not yet known where Lowe's will be going. There's some rumour that he could go to the Mark VDS squad. More on that in a second. And then he's also open to return to Moto2 to fight for the title there. So I think both of those are pretty good options. But in terms of the Mark VDS squad, that makes this whole situation very interesting, if you ask me. Because Scott Redding's manager is Michael Bartholomew, who is also the team manager of Mark VDS. So, I don't know, to me it seems like there could be some cloaks and daggers going on in the background with Michael Bartholomew, you know, almost like if he can, you know, essentially help Lowe's get out of his Aprilia contract maybe, then pull him into the Mark VDS team, because, you know, you'd have to say that out of the box, the Honda is going to be better than the Aprilia. And then, of course, Michael also fulfills his requirements as a personal manager to Scott Redding by getting Scott a ride. So it all seems very convenient if Lowe's does go to Mark VDS. But that's purely me speculating and adding one and one and getting four sort of thing. But yeah, it could be more than meets the eye with that whole situation.
And not to mention Jack Miller currently rides for Mark VDS, so he may have had a hand in pushing him towards the Ducati deal, or maybe dropping a few rumors that Honda was offering Jack a bunch of money and Ducati decided to throw a little extra, you know, numbers on the backside of that check to help Jack get over there. Who knows? That could be
exactly.
A little interesting conspiracy theory.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's a big thing that I think sometimes people, you know, forget is that, you know, frequently riders, managers, teams will, you know, air quotes, leak things to journalists to push their own agenda. And, you know, it can be pretty tricky to try and, you know, weed out what's what. But yeah, you know, at the end of the day, it's the riding that matters. But it's certainly an interesting scenario to, you know, keep an eye on. But we'll know more about that next year. Speaking of next year, Danny Kent, he'll be back in Moto2 next year. And for the year after, as he signs a 2-year deal with the Speed Up team, Denny Kent will have now ridden a 125 Aprilia, a Husqvarna, he has ridden a Moto3 KTM, a Moto3 Honda, a Moto2 Kalex, a Moto2 Suda, and now he'll have ridden a Speed Up. So Denny Kent, another chance to try and prove, you know, why he won that world championship. Clearly has a lot of talent. Maybe the focus isn't there. Hopefully this one does work out for Danny Kent, because, you know, after riding the Speed Up, there's, you know, basically no chassis left for him to try. So, you know, I think it's really down to, no, Danny, it's not that you're not on a Kalex anymore. It could potentially be him. But yeah, interesting to see what Danny Kent can do. He's taking Simone Corsi's seat, and Simone Corsi's going over to Tasker Racing. So that's where perhaps Moto2's most dangerous man, Simone Corsi, is off to.
Yeah, it's like Moto2 is having the biggest shift of all the classes, which, I mean, makes sense. There's a lot of riders, but there's a lot of guys make a lot of lateral moves in Moto2. And I think when, you know, I can't even keep track of who all was moving. I remember when they were talking during even the Red Bull Ring, and they talk about even maybe Luthi was going to move up and take that Mark VDS seat, and then who was going to take, you know, Luthi, and then, you know, who's bringing money. It's we are in full silly season at this point, so we'll have to wait till the dust settles here and probably before the flyaway rounds before we really know who's going where.
Yeah, speaking of dust settling, actually, I learned a fun / surprising fact in Austria. Skyler, if you had to guess, Yoni Hernandez in the AGR team, was he A, being paid to ride, B, riding for free, or C, bringing money?
Bringing money.
Nope, he was being paid €150,000, and that's why the team cut him. Because he was not because he was not getting any results, yet he was being paid a decent amount of money for Moto2.
Well, you know, that could be a... part of the problem for Hector Barbera and Loris Basnes here is that they both look to be possibly losing their seats on the Ducati team there. But Tito Rabat and Xavi Simeon are currently the, you know, rumored guys that could be taking their seats. And, well, Tito, we don't really need to explain why, you know, that would be a bit of a shocker, why he would be taken up by that team. Except for the fact that both these guys would be able to bring in a substantial amount of money and sponsorships to these teams. So,
yeah, about 1.5 million euros in total.
Yeah, so we can definitely see why that, you know, like we said, not all seats, like you were saying, are earned or paid. But, you know, sometimes they, you know, these guys got to do what they do to bring money into the team, the teams to keep afloat. I mean, it's expensive in the premier class. I mean, you got to take what you can get. And if, you know, $1.5 million, that's nothing to just say, eh, no, it's okay, we'll get it somewhere else. That's, you know, if you're not responsible, and if you're not sponsored by Red Bull or Monster, that's hard money to get.
Yeah, and what's also really interesting about the Aventia situation is sort of the reasons behind Hector Barbera and Loris Baz not keeping their rides. So Loris Baz, he had a pretty good ride in Austria, but it seems that Real, or Reale, or however you say it, the title sponsor of the Reale Aventia team, they are an insurance company. Now, one of their main clients is Bullfighters, and Loris Baz, in my opinion, quite understandably, is very against bullfighting, and at one point went on a bit of a Twitter rant about how crap bullfighting is, to which the title sponsor lost a significant amount of business in the bullfighting sponsorship insurance arena, and, you know, as a result, called up the team and basically said, WTF is your rider doing? We don't want him on the bike anymore. And in fact, there was even a chance that Loris Baz may have been cut mid-season because of his rant against bullfighting. So it seems that despite getting some pretty okay results, that Loris Baz has sort of poisoned the water there with his personal view on bullfighting. And then in terms of Hector Barbera, so obviously Barbera last year did really, really well, like the 2014 Ducati or whatever it was. So he pushed the team really hard to, oh yeah, get me a new one, get me, you know, a GP15, you know? And so apparently the team boss essentially reached into his own pocket to pay for a newer Ducati than they would have gotten via the contract anyway.
Uh-oh.
And Hector Barbera has now failed to do anything on it, so the team are pretty annoyed at him.
Yeah, I can imagine so. One of those things, be careful what you wish for, huh?
Yes, certainly in the case of Hector Barbera, very much careful what you wish for, because, yeah, it's been a bit of a poisoned chalice for him. And unless he can come up with, yeah, with about €500,000 is what Tito Rabat is rumoured to be bringing. Unless he can come up with that, it does look like he's probably off out to Superbikes or Moto2. I'm not sure.
So I have to wait to see. Finland was to return to the MotoGP calendar at the, I think it's called the Kaimi Ring, in 2018, but that has now been delayed until 2019. Shocker to anybody with half a brain working for them. So it's got to be completed with construction and be brought up and everything else. And to be honest, I mean, as we've seen with other tracks of recently that were supposed to be built and aren't quite finished or so on and so forth, sometimes it doesn't work out so well. So 2019 is a nice placeholder, but we shall wait and see. I wouldn't hold my breath on even 2019, because the amount of loopholes these tracks have to jump through, I think, is it's harder. It's getting harder and harder to build tracks. And so, you know, 2 years, I don't even know if they've even broken ground on this, to be honest. I've seen the plans for it, but I'm not even sure if it's...
I think they may have broken ground. I'm not 100% sure, but I think there's been more progress made than the Circuit of Wales. So we're already, you know, we're already up one on that. And in more news that is no longer on the prep sheet that we have here, it looks like that the KTM IO team in Moto3 may just become the IO team, as Red Bull want to become like Honda and Mahindra and not have a clear factory fully sponsored team, and instead will just, you know, support a variety of teams. So it looks like IO could potentially be dropping down to one bike next year with their own sponsorship, and it looks like their rider could or would be Darren Binder, but that's still just whispers and rumours. But yeah, KTM shifting their strategy in Moto3, you know, their big point is that they want to have more teams that they can place riders into, as opposed to only having really the two seats of the KTM IO team. So, yep, interesting to see how that works. It's obviously been a pretty successful strategy for Honda this year as they dominate Moto3. Slightly less successful strategy for the old Mahindra, but such is life.
Yeah, I don't know. There might be some lines to read in between on that, because let's say they opened up a whole MotoGP program and a Moto2 program, and there's only so many dollars for so many things. So if you had to drop one of your programs down and spread it out, we're just gonna spread it out to a few other riders.
Could be, but you know, Red Bull has infinite money, and KTM, you know, is pretty close to having pretty infinite money. I don't know. I just don't really feel that money's an issue for the Red Bull KTM partnership. But no, you could be right for sure.
Who knows? So, Suzuki, they may actually be getting their concession points back next year because they have not taken a podium this year, and if they continue to do so through the rest of the year, they will end up getting their concession points back for 2018, which means they will be able to have more engines per changes per rider, more testing, and so on and so forth, which at this point necessarily wouldn't be a bad thing. But I'm not entirely sold that Suzuki is as bad as it looks, because I mean, Rins, who's still trying to learn the MotoGP machine, who still may not even be 100% healthy, he was pretty beat up.
Yeah.
And Ian None, as we know, has struggled on the machine and is at times seemed to have just mentally given up on trying to push on the machine. And when he does, it seems to pay for it, and he may be sick of getting beat up on it. I'm not real sure, but it could have been the loss of the wings this year, maybe change things, or the riding styles are so completely different. Whatever it is, it isn't working this year. So maybe with a bit more testing, they'll be able to figure it out next year and be able to come back with a stronger package for 2018 and then maybe into 2019 if they have a bit more success next year.
Yeah, maybe. And this is, you know, sort of the point of the concession points, you know, coming through, is that if a manufacturer, you know, does make improvements, but then maybe goes a little off track the following year, they then can get back into a position to you know, continue to try and improve themselves again, so that, you know, the racing does stay close, so that it doesn't, you know, just stay as now the big three manufacturers. So yeah, hopefully if, you know, Suzuki do get those concessions back, that they can make the most of them. And obviously to get concession points, you need a dry weather podium. So we need a podium from Andrea Iannone before the end of the year, basically.
Yeah, and the way things are going lately and how competitive this year has been, it's going to be kind of hard to see that, but you never know.
Indeed. You know, we are heading to Silverstone next, where obviously Maverick Vinales got his win on the Suzuki. So maybe it's a circuit where Suzuki works particularly well. We'll have to see on that front.
We sure will. And a bit of bad news and sad news. Former Grand Prix champion Angel Nieto succumbed to his injuries that he had a road accident and a beat on a quad bike and passed away. You know, this year's been a little tough for losing guys unexpectedly in accidents.
Not been a good year.
No. And so, you know, another legend has gone before we wanted to say goodbye, but bit of a bummer when stuff like this happens, but you know.
Yeah, exactly. Just, as you say.
And basically just things, just enjoy your time while you have it.
Indeed, certainly. And you know, like with any death, that's what, you know, everybody in the paddock went out there and did. After, you know, in Brno, there were lots of tributes to Angel Nieto, and the same again in Austria. You know, Alicia Spargaro, he wore an Angel Nieto replica helmet, which was, you know, a pretty nice touch. So yeah, memory still alive and well. And I guess we should probably go into the racing, unless you have any more news to talk about, Skylar.
Oh, no, we've got plenty of racing to burn through, so let's get to it.
Okay, so I will preface this by saying that I have not had a chance to go back and watch any of the races. So I have only watched these races from trackside, which isn't a great idea to know what's going on, especially if we have a race like the MotoGP race in Austria. But we will forge ahead regardless. We'll start with the old Moto3 race in the Czech Republic. The conditions were a little bit sketchy. We had a couple of guys charge ahead, but at the end of the day, it was Juan Mir who, you know, continued to just wow everybody with his just really smart ride. Juan Mir is just such a smart little boy. You know, you watched him in that race, and he sat in fourth for a fair little while. You know, the gap at the front got to be fairly decent at points, but Juan Mir, you know, track drying out, he just sat there and waited, and then once he hit the front, he just, you know, controlled everything. Just some of the best racecraft I think I've ever seen in a Moto3 race from Juan Mir to take the victory ahead of Romano Fenati. And then Aaron Canet, once again, a Honda lockout on the podium. Bo Benschneider, he tried his best, but he was unfortunately fourth. ahead of Juan Fangorvera, and then a John McPhee in sixth. But yeah, just a really great tactical race from Juan Mir in Brno, and I don't think I can express just how impressive his race craft was.
No, I was watching. I have in my notes several times. It's just Mir, .. Wow. Like he sat back, and you're starting to wonder, especially when Fanati had gotten up in front of the group, and you're thinking, okay, Fanati might be able to break. Should Mir be worried? He's back there and forth. Nope, he just sat his time, bid his time. And even when he did get around Fanati, you're thinking, okay, he's not going to be able to pull away. And then when he finally does pull the plug, it's just, you know, you saw the areas he was faster and better on braking. It's just, he was just on another level for that entire race. And he was ice cold when it comes to the last lap. I mean, Fanati, you know, was all the back of him, and still no mistakes, doesn't get pressured in anything. If anybody was making mistakes, it was Fanati, got loose in a couple corners coming through. But Juan Mir, he is fully locked in, and you couldn't even tell he was leading the championship because he didn't look scared, didn't look worried. And when the track was sketchy and it was drying out in there on rain tires, and they'd been abusing for the last 20-some-odd laps.
Yeah, that's the other big thing, right? Is that, as you say, like it was really, really tricky conditions, and Juan Mir had, you know, the most to lose of anybody with his big championship lead, but you know, just kept his cool and forged ahead. I was actually really surprised by how few crashes there were. As you say, Scarlett, it was pretty tricky conditions with it being mixed, and usually tricky conditions in Moto3 don't mix too well. But we actually only had two crashes, and that was Jules Agnello and Maria Herrera, who had a collision on the first lap. But otherwise, we had 30 finishes. That was pretty surprising, in all honesty. A couple of big shout-outs. First to Tim Georgi, the German wild card. He'd led a couple of practice sessions in the wet and had a pretty great ride up inside the top five, actually, when the track was still a little bit wet. But then, understandably, he did drop back when it started to dry. But it does look like that performance for Tim Georgi has already got a couple of teams looking at him for next year, which is always good, and, you know, proves the point that paying, you know, whatever it is, like €20,000 for a wild card can be worth it. So fair play to him. And also a big shout out for Albert Arenas, who came from 32nd on the grid to finish in 12th. So plus 20 places for the Mahindra rider is also pretty impressive. Nakhon Adarat Phuvapat and Adam Noradin, the Thai and the Malaysian rider, they also had a couple of good rides in the top 10. I believe that 9th was Adam Noradin's best result in 2 years. So, you know, good to see the Malaysians coming strong as well.
Yeah, and I actually took time to phonetically break down Adarat Phuvapat's name so I could actually say it from now on. How about that?
Nice job. Yeah, see, it's not too hard once you break it down.
Now, I broke it down, but actually it's kind of funny. When I broke it down, then I went back and looked at the name. It's like, oh, you can actually see it there. It's like, okay, so maybe, you know, you just got to know where to hit your hard letters and you're all right.
Yeah, exactly. And we also had Dennis Foggia of the VR46 Academy. He was in there filling in for Darren Binder, who unfortunately broke, I believe it was his right thumb, in a supermoto training accident in South Africa. So Darren missed both Brno and also Austria, and we'll have to see if he's back for Silverstone. And Dennis Foggia, he was in 14th on his debut. And again, you know, debuting in tricky conditions like that, beat guys like Nea Bastianini, like Lorenzo Della Porta, like Jakob Kornfar, like Nicolo Belega. Belega down in 23rd, one spot ahead of Nicolo Antonelli. So, you know, pretty good for Dennis Foggia, who right now is fighting for the Sev Moto3 Junior World Championship, or whatever the official name is. But yeah, it was a pretty good Moto3 race. You know, quite exciting towards the end, obviously, with the changeable conditions. Had some guys coming strong right at the end there. But again, I only watched it from a pit garage, so I'm not 100% sure of anything else. So do shout if I missed anything, Skylar.
You know, that pretty much covers in a nutshell. I was so enamored with Juan Mir's race, and so were the cameras, that you didn't get to see much else. Aaron Canet had a good drive from he did come up from quite a ways back to get that third, which is something he would probably prove in the next race that we'll get to when we get to the Rebel Ring. But you said that Darren Binder wants to be back for Silverstone, and I think he is probably even more so wanting to be back, considering what his fill-in rider did at the next race. But when we get to the Red Bull Ring, we'll talk about the Platinum Real Estate team and how good of an effort they put in this year.
Indeed. So moving on to Moto2 is a very strange race. or strange races in Brno. The race started, and then it started raining, so they had to stop the race. Unfortunately, Sandro Cortese crashed right as the red flag came out. That was a pretty big bummer for him.
So I actually wanted to pick a bone about that, because I think that red flag came out after he crashed, and I think that was kind of a shitty job that they did with the marshaling of that whole race, because those guys are raising their hands for laps, and especially right before they ra- there was multiple guys racing out of multiple corners and guys backing down. Then they cut to the camera, and there he goes rolling through the gravel, and all of a sudden there's a red flag. Like, that's a little unacceptable on track marshaling to me at that point, I think, is waiting for someone to crash, and then, you know, being reactive instead of proactive is never good in a sport like this.
Yeah, it could be. You know, we've definitely seen in the past that race direction, not just in MotoGP, but in World Superbike and BSB, have waited till the race goes to two-thirds distance to red flag it. This race was nowhere near two-thirds distance when it got red flagged. So yeah, that could definitely be a bit of a questionable one. But the restart of this race was, for some reason, only six laps long. I'm not 100% sure why it was just six laps long, but it was. And it was actually a pretty good race, especially at the start. Tom Lüdy made an unbelievable start from the line, and sort of, you know, never really looked back after that.
Yeah, I mean, he was, like we said, Luffy, it's the halfway point in the season. This is when he starts coming strong, it seems like, most years. And then fortunately we lost Pacini, who made his 200th race start with this race and didn't get to finish. Unfortunately, he went down to turn 11, and then we had I lost my place of my notes, but yeah, no, Luthi was having a fantastic race. And but at that point, this is when he was going forward, that Morbidelli was starting to fall back considerably. He was getting beat up towards the end, and he's kind of lucky to finish where he finished.
Yeah, probably a bit. Franco Morbidelli hit a pretty tough race in eighth. A big shout out though to Joe Roberts, the American coming in to replace Yonny Hernandez. His first time racing the Moto2 Grand Prix bike. He has been racing with that team on the Calyx in Sev, but the spec of those bikes is slightly different. But Joe Roberts in the wet raced to 10th on his Grand Prix debut, which is fairly impressive for the young Californian. And, you know, especially when you consider that other replacement riders, like, you know, Taran McKenzie or Gusto Fernandez, when they were down in, you know, 26th place outside the top 25, for Joe to race into the top 10, I think, should hopefully have him on the list for a couple of different people next year. And yeah, for me, you know, the ride by Joe was one of the standout rides. You know, he was within 1.5 seconds of Franco Morbidelli at the line, so that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, that was it was nice to see that. It's nice to see Joe Roberts. I've actually got to meet him. He's a really cool kid. He's extremely focused. He did a good job when he was here in the Moto America. Like I said, he wrapped up the championship in his first year and then Stock 600. So he's got a lot of talent, and it's good to see an American fill in, and I hope he continues to make way on that team.
Yeah, it seems like he certainly has that ride until at least the flyaways, and then the team will reevaluate, but you have to say, with a top 10, which is better than any result Yonny Hernandez got all year. probably keep him on beyond, but yeah, I mean, it was a six lap race, so it was pretty crazy. You know, you had, like in Moto3, you had a lot of guys really coming strong at the end, and you know, other than Joe Roberts in 10th and Franco Morbidelli down in 8th, I wouldn't say that there were too many huge surprises. Luca Marini got his best ever finish in 4th ahead of Xavi Vieje, and then obviously it was Luti Marquez and Oliveira up there on the podium, and then we had DNFs from Pacini, Cortese, and then Agata, who had a technical problem. I believe his quick shifter snapped on the line, so a bit disappointing for him. But yeah, Moto2, it's Moto2. What more do you say?
I think Agata had a bunch of drama with the whole setup in the pit. Like, I think something happens with him, like, before the red flag or something like that. Like, he couldn't make the race start or something, and then when the second...
Oh, yeah, because he retired on the lap when the red flag came out, so then technically because the red flag goes back a lap. Oh, yeah, because he was arguing quite fiercely with Erta, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in his leathers on the motorcycle, like he was going to defy them and just go out there. And even the announcers were like, dude, don't do that, because if you do that, you're going to be a lot more trouble than missing just one race. So yeah. I was like, ooh, I thought some drama was going to come. But no, he just wheeled it into the house. I think they were just going to argue to the last minute. And if someone finally said, yeah, go, 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 then he didn't want any excuse not to get out there. But it was a bit of an unfortunate thing for Agutter, because he was having a decent weekend, though. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. But yeah, and now on to a MotoGP, and this is a race where I probably have almost no input, because from trackside, it was incredibly difficult to follow what was going on. But my sort of takeaway from what I did see, and, you know, from the news afterwards, is that either Marc Marquez is a genius or a very, very lucky boy with when he decided to change tires. But, you know, either way, thumbs up Marquez.
I think it's a bit of luck, because he came out on the wrong rain tires and pulled it in because he just didn't have a choice. He was getting dropped like a stone through the field. So he came in and got the tires and basically got there before anyone else. And then, of course, Zarco really showed, you know, this was a race where Zarco got to show you why he's still a rookie. He stayed out way too late and waited to switch onto his tires and just ended up getting, you know, tossed, spit out the back. But, you know, it's stuff like this where you're like, okay, well, if, you know, Rossi, these guys had come in a little sooner, the race would have been a little different. But Marquez did come at the right time, got the right set of tires, and ended up just won the race going away at this point. The only person that looked competitive towards him was his teammate, Dana Pedrosa, who finished in second, and he's the third person in history to reach 150 podiums. But Danny had a good race, and had he had been up there with Mark when the tire changes, he would have given him a run for the money. He only finished 12 seconds behind, but I think at one point he was like almost 30 seconds behind Mark. So Danny had a great race, and it certainly did help his jump through the championship. Merck Vinales, he had a race where he seemed to do most of it by himself, and he came in, I think, about the lap before Rossi or something like that, moved up past his teammate. Once he got comfortable, he passed a few more guys on the way to the top. But there was a point at which Marquez, when he was on the dry tires, he was going 10 seconds a lap faster than like when Zarco was on his last lap of the rain tires. Yeah, that's insane. So he ended up actually lapping Zarco on track with his tires. So that's pretty impressive how much quicker the dries were. And by that time, how grave of a mistake that Zarco had made. But any other highlights in the race? I think not too much. I know Bautista had a crash, lost the front end at turn 10, and Aleix Espargaró had to give up three penalty places because of an unsafe release in the pits where his team released him at the wrong time, which in turn put him in the way of Andrea Iannone. Iannone tried to maneuver and stop and claims or says that he hit a storm drain.
Yeah, I watched that. So there's a video floating around of like somebody filming out of Aleix Espargaró's garage into the pits, and you see the whole thing happening. I can't see any storm drains. I think it looked like Iannone just locked the front, but
yeah,
you know, pretty unfortunate for Iannone, and sort of, you know, just representative of his season as a whole, crashing in pit lane. What more can he do? Yeah.
Crashed in pit lane. You know, he's smacking Alex Rins's bike doing it and everything else, and has now actually prompted the speed limit to be lowered in the pit lane to go along with, obviously, with the helmets and everything like that. I know I've heard some people talking, not anyone on any of the feeds or anything like that, but just I've heard some, you know, fans talking how they hate the helmets and what they need to do to stop. And it's like, you know, the helmets actually came way too late. Like any other racing series, guys have helmets on, and it's, you got to protect your noggin, man. You could fall over backwards and smack your head on the back of somebody's foot peg, and that could be done for you. So it's a dangerous sport. You should take precautions. So, you know, don't get all, oh, it wasn't like that before. Just, you know, they're making adjustments to make things safer in pit lane. If they got to bring the speed limit down. And that's what even, I think who's Rossi's mechanic that's real famous? I can't remember right now.
Alex Briggs.
He was talking about that they should have brought the speed down before they added the helmet. So now he's got both worlds, so should be good.
Yeah, but it was actually really interesting. I was chatting to Peter McLaren of Crash.net, and obviously, you know, we've had flag-to-flag races now for like, what, for like 10 years? But it's only really been in the last 2 years that, that anything has become an issue in flag changeovers. You know, before this, you know, we'd had some accidents in pit lane. you know, fair enough. But, you know, we'd never really had all this discussion and, you know, all these incidents so frequently about faded flags. And, you know, I was sort of chatting to him, you know, like, why has it now all of a sudden become, you know, such a big point, such a big focus? And he was saying it's because basically Marc Marquez realized that you could gain seconds in the bike changeover when you can gain tenths out on track. So now guys like Marc Marquez, Scott Redding, and now the other riders too, but originally, you know, Marquez obviously with, you know, the direct bike hop was sort of the big thing that we saw, is that now, you know, riders used to come into pit lane, you know, used to be doing the 60, used to, you know, just go into their pits and hop over as quickly as they could. But now everybody's pushing in the pits to go as fast as they can. And that's why it's now becoming a big issue, is because now, like, I think that just highlights how competitive you have to be in MotoGP to, you know, be fighting at the front, is that you now have to be pushing even when you're changing bikes. You have to be on the absolute limit, which is pretty incredible. And, you know, once again, just sort of how, you know, new riders come along and, you know, they introduce their thing, which then, you know, changes the level, really raises the level. So yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. So yeah, go check out crash.net basically.
And if anyone was playing my drinking game from last time with Masterclass and Masterstroke, you probably didn't make it through this podcast because you probably died of alcohol poisoning. So keeping your updates on that as well. All righty.
Jorge Lorenzo was 15th, and that was after he'd been saying, oh yeah, I'm feeling good in mixed conditions, we can do this. And he was 15th.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, okay. I thought we were talking about race results, not disappointing results.
Oh, snap, crackle, and pop. No, speaking of good race results, actually, Pol Espargaró got KTM's first top 10 in MotoGP with a 9th place. You know, obviously, this was a bit of a weird race, but, you know, fair play to Pol Espargaró. Bradley Smith, unfortunately, failed to finish. But, you know, the KTM...
on the last lap, too. Yeah,
but, you know, the KTM is definitely coming good in MotoGP. You know, I don't think it's going to be winning races or probably even getting top fives this year, but they're making progress, which is exactly what they need to do.
Yep, as long as you're moving forward, you're moving in the right direction.
Indeed. So now, should we do like the paddock and roll over to Austria?
As long as you got your hand waving around in a circle, you'll be good.
Yep. Yep, I do. So we are all okay.
Alrighty. So we're going to start in Moto 3, which it was back-to-back poles for Rodrigo. I forgot to mention that he was the first Argentinian to get pole, and then now has done it two in a row. So that was a good thing for him. Mir and Fanati were going to be the ones to watch in this race because they had both had to come from the fourth row, and they're going to be starting right next to each other. Although it seemed like it might have been a little disadvantage to Fanati because Mir's teammate, Leverloy, was just on the other side of them. So it was...
Yeah, Moto 3 qualifying was, you know, as big a joke as ever. And I think 24 riders all got a €500 fine because, you know, they couldn't penalize 24 riders. But I think that a €500 fine is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, most of these kids are paying upwards of €100,000 to be racing for a year. What is €500 difference going to make to them? Like, I don't think that fining people is going to make a difference at all to this situation. I think that, you know, Erta, Race Direction, whoever, need to, you know, come up with a proper plan to try and curb the, you know, the waiting for a tow that we see in Moto 3. I mean, you know, anytime we see a whole group of Moto 3 riders ride through the pits together, a little piece of me dies inside. And there's only so many pieces I have left to die. But yeah, I just do not understand it. And it's this thing where, you know, obviously, you know, working for Mahindra, you know, work sort of closely with some of the riders, and, you know, you'll listen to the debriefs after, and, you know, the crew chief or whatever will say to a rider, look, you were alone in the race and you set a time better than your qualifying time. Just go out there, be alone during qualifying, and we can start higher up on the grid. So it's so strange. And, you know, we also had Romano Fanati. He got a bit Italian, a bit handsy, with Fabio De Gian Antonio after they had not really a running together, but De Gian Antonio did cut up Fanati a little bit during qualifying. So yeah, Romano Fanati went back to his old ways and, you know, gave him the finger and all this sort of stuff.
You tell me Fanati's a little hot-headed? No.
Yeah, surprisingly, Romano Fanati in Austria of all places is a little hot-headed, but luckily he didn't get cut from this team this year. So luckily to not keep that little tradition alive for Romano Fenati. But yeah, as you say, he was looking to be one of the bigger threats in this race. And it was actually a pretty exciting race. You know, we had quite a big group at the start, about 10 riders or so. But Juan Mir, whew, that boy. He put his head down and never looked back and went to take a 3-second win over Philip Ertl. You know, again, Juan Mir just so strong. You know, it's clear Juan Mir is a huge talent. And if you ask me, he's a bit more Maverick Vinales than Marc Márquez. He's a real thinker. You know, doesn't really take too many unnecessary risks. You know, doesn't crash a huge amount. Just rides really smart, rides within himself, does exactly what he needs to do and no more.
Yeah, and when he gets by himself too, he knows how to put his head down and just lap after lap after lap after lap. And they were saying, you know, his consistency of running the same lap time was within like 5/10 of each lap for like 20 laps or something like that. It was insane, just putting in the work again and again. They had a nice slow-mo shot when he was first trying to break from the group and how hard he was pushing that. He slid the front and the rear over the curves, off the curves, bounced the front wheel up in the air, bounced the rear wheel off the curb into the air, got it back on in a straight line, and still came out of the corner faster than the guys behind him. I mean, that's just that was a little Marquez there, but the rest is Vinales. But yeah. real quick, speaking of the Leopard Racing team, though, Livio Loi, who actually had a really good weekend, he's going to be losing his seat, and the beast, Bastianini, is going to be jumping over to that team next year. That was announced. And so that's, you know, Bastianini, who's had not the best season. Everyone thought he was going to come in and have a better season because he was on the Australia Galicia team, but it's just not worked out for him there. And so going over to Leopard, and obviously, with the results now, think about Bastianini with this, they'll say, okay, Estrella Galicia is a really good team. Leopard is a really good team. So if you don't have a good season next year, then ooh.
Yeah, I mean, I think Leopard is sort of last chance saloon for Bastianini, definitely. Yes. You know, I think that Estrella Galicia and Leopard as teams work in very different ways. And it's clear that, you know, whatever way of working Estrella Galicia have just isn't gelling with Andrea Bastianini. So maybe, you know, maybe that change in how the team works will help Andrea a little bit. But, you know, both him and Nicolò Belega have just been really, really off color this year. You know, we thought both of them would be, you know, championship contenders. But, you know, Belega, essentially, it seemed, I don't know what's wrong with him, to be honest, but he's, you know, he's been making dreadful starts every race.
It's the starts are killing him. He dropped back to, I think, to like 21st off the start of this race. It was insane.
Yeah, and then, you know, he did manage to fight his way through to, where was that? Through to 11th. But, you know, this is, you know, a Moto3 junior world champion and a guy who was, you know, contesting race wins and stuff in his rookie year. So, I don't know. And Belega won't be moving to Moto2 next year, which is a really, really strange decision if you ask me. But what do I know?
Yeah, and the thing is too, so, you know, we've been giving like a little bit of a break saying it's probably his height and his weight that's really hampering him on the starts. But then you got Bo Benschneider, who's at least as big, if not bigger. He was out there crushing it in the beginning of the race. Yeah. So I'm not quite sure. And he's on a KTM as well. And so I don't know. I don't know if it's, you know, Belega's got some problem on cold tires and a full tank these days that he's not feeling quite comfortable, but I hope he figures it out, because like you said, he was a promising star that at the beginning of this year, everybody had him on in the deck to be one of the championship players. And now he's just a middle of the pack kind of guy that if he gets the top five, it's been a good race, not even considering for the win.
Yeah. So there was a Moto3 and Moto2 test after the Austrian weekend, and Belega spent all weekend working on his starts. So hopefully, you know, some drilling will improve him a little bit. But yeah, behind Juan Mir, it was a really good race. Philip Ertl, he managed to just sneak second, which was good. You know, good to have a KTM on the podium at their home race. And then a Jorge Martin, who his ankle is still pretty jacked up. He only did one session on Friday. The pain was so bad. Jorge Martin managed to just steal third place from Livio Loi. Livio Loi and Jaume Mesia, who we'll talk about in a second, they were the only two riders to consistently hit 220 km per hour top speed the entire weekend. And, you know, obviously with Austria not really being the most technically challenging circuit, top speed really, really helped there. So, you know, that probably helped Livio Loi and Jalma Masia get a bit closer up to the front than maybe they would have been at, you know, a track like Jerez or something.
And you also know that Livio Loi and Jalma Masia probably both weigh about 100 pounds combined. Yep. So that usually helps a lot too.
Yep, Jalma Masia is quite literally the smallest rider on the grid. I guess we'll talk about him now. So Jalma Masia replacing, as you said earlier, Darren Binder on the Platinum Bay Real Estate machine. Jalma Masia, he's a regular front runner now in the SEV. He spent 2 years with the Australia Galicia team in the CEV and didn't really do much. But now he's moved over to a KTM team and is really excelling in the SEV. And he came in and really excelled in the Moto3 World Championship. You know, as a wild card, you know, scoring points is pretty good as a wild card slash replacement. But, you know, he was at some points in second place and leading that second group. And perhaps the funniest moment of the entire weekend was when Jalma Masia, a replacement rider in his first ever World Championship appearance, went past Jorge Martin, one of the more experienced riders in Moto3, and tapped the back of his bike, telling him to just get behind me and we'll catch one mere. Jorge Martin did not listen to Jalma Masia, but fair play to Jalma Masia for giving it a go.
And Martin actually gave him a bit of a head shake when he was doing it. He's like, listen here, like, you just got up here to play the big boys. Why don't you calm down a second? Masia actually could have had a better finish. He did. He made a mess of his race strategy there at the last couple laps, but he had a great race. And I'm pretty sure that he's definitely planted his flag in the Moto3 paddock, and someone will be picking him up quite soon, because that kid's got a lot of talent to come in there at 16 years old. And to be able to run like that, with those guys, I mean, that was pretty impressive. And that team, the Platinum Bay Real Estate team, obviously it just goes to show you now they've had two fill-in riders who've done great. You've seen Darren Binder and Marcos Ramirez seemingly come out of nowhere this year to be regulars in the top five, top 10. So this team has definitely hit their stride with the KTM, and it's good to see that one of the KTM teams is really, you know, putting together a solid season. Not necessarily the one we thought, but they're definitely having a pretty good season.
Yeah, so speaking of the KTM teams we thought would be strong, yeah, not a good weekend for KTM IO. Bo Benschneider seemed to forget that you need to brake for corners, so slammed into the back of John McPhee.
Yes, he did.
Don't worry, Bo. I use the same braking marker in the MotoGP game, so you're all good. So yeah, John McPhee, understandably pretty upset. But both McPhee and Benschneider had been up there fighting for the front. And then Tatsuki Suzuki, he also forgot that you need to brake for corners, so slammed into the side of Niccolò Antonelli. Antonelli then went up and gave him a bit of Italian hand language to show his dissatisfaction with the Japanese rider. Everybody in the crashes was okay, which is obviously the most important thing. And then we also had a crash for Nacker and Adarat Fuvapat. Lorenzo Della Porta, he crashed. And then Albert Arenas and Marco Bezzecchi, the two Mahindra riders, they crashed together on the last corner, which was fun for me as the press officer.
I can only imagine that. Like, oh, the race is going, oh, shit.
All right, fighting spirit. Fighting spirit is important.
Okay, that's a good way to spin that. I'll take that. And with that, I think we're done with that, and we'll move on to Moto2.
Yes, indeed. Moto2 in Austria. It was a pretty exciting race again. You know, Moto2 really hit a bit of form in terms of, you know, exciting racing. And it was a pretty dramatic start to the race, as we had Fabio Quartararo, Sandro Cortesi, Lorenzo Baldassarri, and Luca Marini all go down at the first corner. Fabio Quartararo, unfortunately, broke his right wrist, so he's in doubt for Silverstone. But not the first time that we've seen a lot of Moto2 riders crash at the first corner in Austria. When it was wet during practice, it was like five riders in a row all just go down without any warning into turn one. And obviously the barrier is quite close there. And that caused some MotoGP riders to understandably kick up a bit of a fuss about the safety of the circuit. You know, guys like, I believe it was Alicia Spargaro, Cal Crutchlow, and a couple of other guys said that if it's raining on race day, we will not race, which caused a lot of Twitter discussion. Josh Brooks didn't really make himself seem like a great dude by accusing Alicia Spargaro of being a dress emoji, which caused a whole argument between them two, which was actually quite funny, because Alicia Spargaro essentially said, fuck you, I'm faster in the wet than you are in the dry, you try and do this. So that was quite amusing, but you know, lots of Twitter drama lately, which hasn't been detracting from the racing. But yeah, the Spielberg circuit is a little sketchy, I'm not gonna lie. Standing trackside, there's a lot of Armco barriers that are very, very close. But luckily everybody, apart from, you know, as we said, Fabio Quartararo, who broke his wrist, and Danny Kent, who did crash at turn one in practice, he unfortunately suffered some whiplash. So his replacement ride for Marcel Schroeder ended with him not racing, which is pretty, pretty disappointing. But yeah, the race after that, it was a great duel out the front between Franco Morbidelli, Alex Marquez, Tom Lutti, and Miguel Oliveira. It looked like Francesco Bagnaia. Pecco looks like he'd maybe get into that battle as well, but sort of just ran out of laps. And yeah, it was a good fight. Oliveira, he looks like he could in fact win the race, but unfortunately had a pretty nasty high side towards the end of the race, about five laps from the end. So that ruled out his chances, which did allow Franco Morbidelli to then roll out to a 1 second victory, get back to winning ways after the disappointment of Brno, and Mark VDS took their first 1-2 since like Misano 2015, I think they were saying.
Yeah, it was something like that. And then, you know, Marquez and Luthi had a great battle all race long. And when Luthi pulled up next to Marquez at the end of the race, they were kind of gesturing each other and giving handshakes. The announcer was like, ooh, Luthi's upset, Luthi's this, and they're good friends off the track. And when they got to Park Ferme, they were both smiles, goofing around. They were like saying, no, we both had the same idea. Like, okay, I'm faster. If I get out front, I can get us back to Morbidelli. No, I'm faster. And they kept doing the swapping back and forth. And just about a scene about every lap or so there, Luthi was blown turn three wide, and Marquez would get the undercut and come back underneath and just repeat lap after lap after lap. And then right at the end, Marquez got in a little too deep in one of the corners and sucked Luthi in with him. They both kind of ran wide. And that's when Morbidelli really got his good gap. But it was a strong race by Morbidelli to be able to stay out front with that constant pressure behind him and those guys beat him up. But yeah, like you said, Miguel Oliveira, man, he had a weird high side because the bike set him up for a high side, but he actually got ejected side saddle. So he didn't get the like thrown over the bike thing. And he was looking okay for a crash right up until the bike took a nice little cartwheel into the back of his head. And then he went tumbling through the gravel about eight times. So I'm sure Miguel Oliveira might have been a bit concussed from that one because he sure did take a smack. But
yeah, he did go off in the ambulance and walked into the ambulance. But no updates on Oliveira's condition after that. So I'm hoping/guessing it wasn't, you know, super, super serious. As you say, Skylar, maybe a bit of concussion, but hopefully he will be all okay for Silverstone. But his teammate, Brad Binder, he had his best ride of the season so far, I believe, off the top of my head, as Binder crossed the line in seventh place ahead of Jorge Navarro. Both those guys now, you know, after a bit of a difficult start to the season, Jorge Navarro for crashing too much, Binder with his injury, you know, both of those rookies are now really coming on strong and really starting to establish themselves in the Moto2 field.
Yeah, they're consistently both in the top 10 now, which is more than what you can ask for a rookie. And they're both learning, and they're both getting faster as the season goes. So by the time next year hits, those guys will be front runners for sure.
Yep, and just ahead of them was Takaaki Nakagami in sixth. Nakagami, who's apparently going to MotoGP, not really anywhere close to challenging for victory, as he was 8.8 seconds off the win and 5 seconds behind Mattia Pessini in fifth. We had Domi Agata in 9th, Fifth Siren in 10th, Simone Corsi 11th. Nagashima and the Pons brothers, they had some of their best races as they were 12th, 13th, and 14th. And then Remy Gardner rounded out the points. Joe Roberts was in 19th and 43.8 seconds off the win. So still a bit of work for Joe to do in the dry. But, you know, I think that, you know, clearly the talent's there for Joe. And he was about 3 seconds ahead of Taran McKenzie, who's, you know, in sort of a similar situation of getting thrust into the world championship a bit last minute.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a shame that Quartararo, because, you know, there was a guy that, you know, we were saying he got taken out in the beginning, and someone who's been improving, he was looking like he could have been definitely running around probably with the top guys. Had a nice qualifying in six, and he's been improving. Finally, he's becoming the racer that we may have been expecting. Not, you know, not quite the Marquez killer we all thought, but he's definitely been learning. And unfortunately, this is going to set him back. And hopefully, with that wrist break, it's not going to be, They're dreaded with the scaphoid one, and when they hurt and when they lose the blood to the bone and all that stuff. I think Casey Stoner had to deal with that, and several other writers have, where it seemed to take them a long time to be able to heal and recover. Almost they had to adapt their writing style to get around the injury. So hopefully it's nothing too serious and he can come. I doubt Silverstone, because that's a high speed track, which is going to put a lot of force down through his wrist, but under braking. So, you know, that's unfortunate to see that. But like you were saying, it was a great race and a great weekend for Moto2 in general. And it was Morbidelli. I mean, this guy is pretty much showing why he's headed to MotoGP. I mean, when he needs to win, he does.
Yeah, and I'm really intrigued to see how Morbidelli will do in MotoGP. We'll have to wait and see, obviously, but hopefully he can bring those Moto2 results up, Johann Zarco style. And then moving on to the big race, the Moto Grand Prix. And what a race it was. We had Marc Marquez on pole ahead of Andrea Dovizioso. Jorge Lorenzo on the front row. Obviously, historically, and by historically I mean last year, this has been a Ducati track. You know, there's only about three corners on the entire track. So it's all really just about acceleration and top-end speed. And that's what Ducati does best. But it seemed like Marc Marquez had found a little something. You know, he spent the entire Brno test the week before just focusing on trying to get the bike set up for this corner. And as we said, it was building up to be a thrilling race. Jorge Lorenzo made the start of his life to lead in the opening laps and opened up a pretty sizable advantage at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, it was not to last for Lorenzo, and he did eventually drop back. But not before having a brilliant little three-way battle with Andrea Dovizioso and Marc Marquez. Meanwhile, Danny Pedrosa, Johann Zarco, Valentino Rossi, and Maverick Vinales, they're in a bit of a second group behind those three, all trying to close them down. You know, some pretty hard fighting there. Rossi got sent wide a couple of times at turn one, as did Vinales. So, you know, they were all sparring amongst themselves. And then Lorenzo continued to drop back and back and back, which just left Andrea Dovizioso and Marc Marquez to duke it out for victory. And duke it out is exactly what they did, as we had perhaps one of the best last laps we've had all year, maybe in the last couple of years. Phillip Island last year, the year before, 2015, Phillip Island last lap was pretty good. But this was also a pretty good last lap. And those last couple of corners, both Dovi and Marquez, they were determined to get that win.
Yeah, this is... I was up early and I had to go take off to go watch the race, but I hopped on Facebook real quick, and the first person that comes up is our old Motopod alumni, Martin Dollington. He goes, if you haven't seen the MotoGP race, stay away from all social media. Do not listen to the results, because it's one of the best races of the year. So I said, okay, well, I can't wait to get home to check this out. Get home, pull it up, and watch this. Last, like, four laps of this race were amazing. And I got to, you know, give it up to Dovizioso, as I say, is a pretty smart guy, because he knew who he was racing with, and he gave him enough room to be the wild Marquez that is of old without Marquez collecting both of them, because he was trying. And Mark is... you know, this guy, it's funny that he talks about, he likes to be, you know, he got rid of the old Marquez. He's a smarter Marquez, but I think this guy's just a winner no matter what. Like he says that, but he wants to win regardless. And he's going to push no matter how close or how far he is in second place and how many laps are left. He wants to win. He didn't quite get this time because the Dovizioso just made the correct move and got back underneath him. And even in the slow-mo, how many times did they touch coming out of that last corner? That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, there was some really great slow-mos from that entire race. You know, there's one slow-mo where Marquez and Jorge Lorenzo are essentially almost going to collide. And, you know, the slow-mo shows Jorge Lorenzo, you know, using his knees and stuff to counter-steer and counter-balance. And, yeah, you know, it really highlighted, you know, just how good all of these guys are. You know, Sofa Racer, he had a tweet where, you know, it was that slow-mo video. And he said, this is why you're in an office on Monday, and they're, you know, they're still in Austria, basically. Which, you know, I thought was pretty apt. And yeah, as we always say, you know, everybody in MotoGP is hugely talented. It's that some people are more talented than others. You know, Danny Pedrosa is across the line in third, Jorge Lorenzo fourth. Jorge Lorenzo, despite the you know, the big drop in tires or the big drop in pace or whatever it was, he was pretty happy with the race. Said it was his strongest race of the year, You know, we've seen it, you know, a couple of races now where Lorenzo starts really strong and then drops back. But, you know, he's staying out the front for more and more laps. So something is getting closer and closer with that Ducati. You know, step by step by step, Lorenzo's adjusting to it. And, you know, clearly with Andrea Dovizioso winning three races now. Sure, they've all been at pretty high-speed tracks of Mugello, Barcelona and here. But, you know, the Ducati is now there or thereabouts with the Honda and the Yamaha. The leading Yamaha was actually Johann Zarco in fifth place. Ahead of Maverick Vinales and Valentino Rossi. So, I don't know. It's tricky. You know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the new Yamaha frame. You know, they followed Maverick Vinales' direction, didn't follow Rossi's direction, yada, yada, yada. So I'm not sure if it's that, you know, is it that the frame is actually pretty shit, or is it just showing how good Johann Zarco is? Or is it, it's probably a combination of both, to be honest. But, you know, fair play to Johann Zarco. 0.2 seconds ahead of Maverick Vinales. And, you know, for not the first time, he's the top Yamaha.
This guy is, he keeps impressing every time he shows up at the track. I mean, yeah, he definitely has some rookie moments, like we said in Brno, where he stayed out too late in the tires. But his racecraft, I mean, he wasn't just like he got gifted that position. He raced for that position as well. But I wanted to bring it back to Lorenzo. You were saying he's staying out in front longer, but he's also not dropping back as far when he does drop back. So it's coming good. And Silverstone could be another, you know, decent track for them. It's got a lot of high speed sections and some high speed turns. So now they've got their wings back as well with their wing, but not a wing fairing. Yeah, they may be. God, that thing is fucking hideous, but. I mean, I call it the pug just because it looks like it got kicked in the front of it and it got smushed up. But anyway, but so definitely coming good. And I hope that, you know, it can be faster because the more riders that are faster at the front, the better the racing gets.
Yeah, no, for sure. And yeah, I'm pretty confident that Lorenzo will be there, will be up on the podium a couple more times this year. We'll just have to wait and see. Alvaro Bautista, he had a pretty good ride up to 8th, just ahead of Loris Baz in 9th. But perhaps the ride of the weekend goes to Mika Kallio, who, as a wild card, was 10th. Paul Espargaro DNF due to a technical issue. But Mika Kallio, he was over 10 seconds faster than... In fact, he was almost 20 seconds faster than Bradley Smith, who's obviously the full-time rider on that KTM. Now, I know that everybody's saying, oh, Mika Kallio's probably done a million laps of Spielberg as a Red Bull rider, but Mika Kallio hadn't done a test on the bike there in a year, and Mika Kallio hasn't actually done that many tests at all this year. So for Kallio to beat in 10th on that KTM is hugely, hugely impressive. And, you know, even Casey Stoner tweeted, wow, great job, Mika. You know, maybe the full-time KTM riders need to step their game up a little bit.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting to see, right? One race, let's see you do it for five back-to-back when you got to do a completely different setup for each race and you just don't have one to worry about. But, it still was a great race to finish 10th to be a wild card on any machine is good. I mean, it's not easy coming into MotoGP. There's all the things to learn, the track, the bike, the circuit, all that. So good on him to see that. And that leads us into our championship. So Marc Marquez is leading the championship, 174 points. Andrea Dovizioso closed the gap down a little bit. He's now 158, 8 points in front of Maverick Vinales on 150, who is in turn in front of 9 points in front of Valentino Rossi at 141, and Danny Pedrosa at 139 in fifth point. So there's your top five are still relatively close. Marquez is got a little bit of, you know, gap on the rest of these guys, but.
Yeah, but all it takes is, you know, one crash for Marquez. One bad weekend, you know, maybe he gets the tire strategy wrong in a flag to flag. But, you know, I in all honesty, I'm pretty surprised that Marquez is actually, you know, leading the championship after the start to the year and after testing. You know, I was really, really convinced that this was Maverick Vinales' championship to lose. But, you know, Marquez is still doing really well, and I'm just hoping that there's a MotoPod episode from the start of the year where I said, never rule out Marc Marquez, even though there's all those Honda crisis headlines, so I can sound like I know what I'm talking about. But, yeah, you know, again, Marc Marquez, you know, we know that there's a fair few problems with that Honda. They've sorted them out, but, you know, he's just so strong. And Andrea Dovizioso, I mean, what more can we say about Andrea Dovizioso? You know, everybody's going on about Mattia Pessini and, you know, oh, he's a fine wine, maturing, he's so good now. But Andrea Dovizioso, I mean, how long has he been in MotoGP? And now he's gotten 3 wins in a single season. And he's a legitimate title contender. I mean, he's second in the title race. And he's the leading Ducati by whatever it is, 80 points. I mean, Andrea Dovizioso, if anybody, you know, last year, there's a lot of people going, oh, why would you keep Dovi? Why would you keep Dovi over Iannone? Well, this is why.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't quite get over, you know, just how good this season is. You know, Silverstone next, Maverick Vinales won their last year on the Suzuki. Maverick Vinales has to go in there as one of the favourites for the race, which would really help his championship. If he can, you know, get up there, fight with Marc Marquez, maybe have one or two people between them as well. You know, I think Zarco could actually go quite well at Silverstone, but we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, it's just what a great year. What a fantastic year. You know, Zarco, he's sixth. Overall 99 points, which put him 22 points ahead of his teammate Jonas Folger as they fight for Rookie of the Year. Obviously, with their results, you know, still set to fluctuate a little bit. You know, maybe those 22 points aren't that many, but it definitely seems like Johann Zarco has one hand on the Rookie of the Year trophy. But in terms of, you know, the championship trophy, I don't think that Marquez can really claim that he has any hands, any fingers on that trophy yet. You know, we still have seven races left this season. And under 20 points separating the top two at this stage in the season is something pretty special.
Yeah, and not to mention that the way the season has gone, everyone has taken a tumble, and everyone seems to have had their share of the lead of the championship or been very close to leading the championship at one point, and it's just tossed it away in the weekend. So it really is just anything can happen, anything goes, and we'll have to wait till we set the fireworks off in Valencia before we know who's going to be champion this year, I think.
Yep, certainly. So Cal Crutchlow, he's ninth, ahead of Daniele Petrucci. Then it's Bautista, Aleix, Jack Miller, Lois Baz, Scott Redding, Andrea Iannone in 16th with 33 points, who is 4 points behind Scott Redding and is 8 points ahead of Carol Abraham. Tito Rabat is ahead of Paul Espargaro, Hector Barbera. Alex Rins actually has 12 points, which surprised me a little bit. Bradley Smith has 8. Michele Pirro has 7th, Mika Kallio has 6, Sam Lowes has 2 points so far, which is 1 point more than Sylvain Gintoli got in his replacement rides. So, yeah, Sam Lowes, I was standing and watching at turn 1 before I had to jet in Austria, and Lowes got pushed wide when Paul Espargaro had his mechanical, and Lowes was pissed off. He was about ready to jump off his bike and smack Paul in the face. Even though I don't think there was really anything that Paul could have done, because as I said, it was a technical problem. But, you know, when you're on the bike, you obviously don't know that. But yeah, Austria, fantastic weekend by all accounts. And I'm very much looking forward to going back and actually watching the MotoGP race and not having to just watch Twitter highlights while I try and speed my way to Vienna.
Right. Be a little better, be more comprehensive. No, it was good. It was definitely a good race to watch. It's definitely one of those ones where, like you were saying, it was better to see it on TV than it was at the racetrack, probably. So, but yeah, that brings us probably to the end of the show. I don't think there's any more to talk to. I've got to go get some rest because I've got a lovely long drive in front of me tomorrow. So I need to call it a night here. But unless you got anything else to say?
No, I am. I'm all done. It's only just gone 8:30 a.m. here. So I've probably missed something, but you know it's fairly early. So give us a break, yo. But yeah, no, it was. You know, it's been 2 great races. Obviously, we have World Superbikes coming back this weekend at the always lovely Lausitzring. I'm so excited to go to Lausitzring, and then Silverstone. The weekend after, and then this weekend we also have Cadwell BSB, so expect some pretty impressive Twitter photos of everybody launching it over the mountain. But yeah, you know, the second half of the season starts now. You know, some championships are a bit closer than others, but it's definitely going to go down to the wire in MotoGP, just how we like it. And yeah, what a time to be a racing fan.
Absolutely, it's been a great season across all of them, so enjoy it, everyone.
Bye.